This week, I was reminded of the movie Inside Out. Perhaps some of you have seen it. It's a Pixar film, animated feature, and it's about a young girl who moves from Minnesota to San Francisco. And her emotional life, if you will, is personified. And so in her emotional landscape, we see that there's this control center in the mind. Different emotions are different characters. So there's anger, which is this little red guy. When he gets really angry, his head erupts in flames. There's fear, who runs around always worrying about what's going to happen next and what horrible thing might be coming. There's disgust, who looks downward on quite a lot of things. And there's joy, and joy runs around. She's always trying to get the other emotions in line, if you will. She's planning parties. She's trying to make everyone have fun. And there's another character, sadness. And most of the other characters, especially joy, avoid sadness. And it's understandable once you meet the character. She kind of mopes about, and when she enters most situations, she definitely brings the mood down, which is exactly what joy is trying to have not happen. But as the plot progresses, joy and sadness must go on a mission together to figure out why the girl's emotional landscape is shutting down, why parts of it are even disintegrating. And I apologize for the spoiler, but it's been out for 4 years now. But what ends up happening as the girl slides closer and closer into what I would call a depression, where she can't feel anything at all, not sadness, not joy, not even fear, it turns out that the key to bringing her back to life is actually sadness herself. It is sadness that shows up and saves the day, allowing the girl to express her own deep sadness to her parents. As you can imagine, through the course of the movie, she's been very difficult to deal with. She's been fighting with her parents. She even runs away from home at one point. But once she is able to name her own deep sadness, her parents are able to reach out and embrace her, to hold her and comfort her, and to let her know that she is loved. It was not sadness, in fact, that caused all of these problems, but it was the avoidance of sadness. And I see this so much in my work as a priest, that so often beneath difficult behaviors, between things that annoy us about one another, there is so often underneath all of that, that same little child's sadness. That sadness that hasn't found a home, that hasn't yet found its voice. Learning to sit with our brokenheartedness is a lifelong task. And so, in a place of brokenheartedness in our country today, we come to our reading from the book of Ecclesiastes, which, as we read it, vanity of vanities, says the teacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, might sound like something more from 19th century existentialist novels or absurdism than it does from the Bible, but it is firmly in the canon, I assure you. And another translation of this line in the Common English Bible, not necessarily a translation, but one that tries to say in our modern English what the ideas are in the text, they translate this line as perfectly pointless, says the teacher, perfectly pointless. Everything is pointless. So what does this book have to say to our sadness? First, a little historical context of this book. It was written sometime between 450 and 330 BCE in the post-exilic period. So this means after the people were in exile. And in the Persian Empire where they lived, It was actually a time of economic growth and development. Coinage had been introduced, and so for the first time, people, even very poor people, had an opportunity to accumulate some wealth. This is a book that comes from a time of prosperity and growth. And in the NRSV Bible commentary on Ecclesiastes, they write that one of the primary ideas that Ecclesiastes tackles is that every generation must deal with the fact that mortals inevitably live in a world in which they do not have control. And so the teacher, this figure, or preacher, literally it means gatherer, so one who gathers people, which is where teacher comes in, but also one who gathers belongings, wisdom, wealth, everything. And so it's a King Solomon type figure that speaks to us from their place of great privilege, of having gathered so much in the world, having seen so much, and then offering us their perspective on it. And what perspective it is. The teacher looks out and sees that everything looks rather bleak. There's oppression everywhere. Foolish people prosper while the good struggle. And all humans, regardless of how good or bad they are, die. Even our work, which we toil over and care so deeply about, will one day be given to someone else who may not care about it like we do, who may not steward it well. And so the teacher, looking out at all this, says, perfectly pointless. Everything is pointless. And this word, translated either as vanity or in the common English as pointless, it's this Hebrew word, hebel. Forgive my pronunciation. If Brother Eckhart were here, he could correct me on that. But it is hebel, which means literally breath or vapor. And so it's an extended metaphor throughout Ecclesiastes that all is temporal, all is absurd, that all is fleeting. So it isn't just that everything's pointless, and it isn't just that everything is about our own vanities, our own egos, our own wants and desires, but it's that everything is but a breath or a vapor, the wisps of activity that are here one moment and gone the next, that all is temporal, all impermanent, from human life to our wealth, to our governments, to our very lives. All is hebel. And as I shared in my church at home reflection this week, the book of Ecclesiastes is to me sort of like that party guest who shows up at an engagement party talking about the high rates of divorce. It's true, but it's pretty depressing. And the teacher wants us to understand this, though. That we don't get rid of the absurdity of the world by pretending like it doesn't exist. Like joy in the movie, we can't erase sadness just because it makes us uncomfortable. And so there's an honesty in the book of Ecclesiastes that to me this week, after what was an extremely hard and devastating week for our country, there's an honesty in Ecclesiastes that to me is more comforting than a sunny outlook that some of our other texts might offer. That Ecclesiastes is also that friend who shows up and puts their arm around us and says, yeah, things are terrible. I feel that too. That yes, the foolish speak loudly and the wise suffer. That children sit in cages while the powerful sit next to their large barns, as our gospel says. That gun violence continues to take lives with a randomness that undoes us. That trauma piles upon trauma in our country and can leave us feeling weighed down and hopeless. As the teacher says at one point, there is nothing new under the sun. Every generation must deal with the fact that mortals inevitably live in a world in which they do not have control. And so what does it mean to live in the world as it really is, when what it is seems so bleak and awful sometimes? And we can take heart in that we are not the first to ask this question, that every generation must reckon with it. And so the book of Ecclesiastes ends by saying, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for that is the whole duty of everyone. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." In other words, when things seem hopeless, pointless, the writer of Ecclesiastes reminds us that God is God and that we are to trust and live in fearful awe, which is essentially what Jesus tells us in our gospel as well. Don't focus on the things that don't matter and won't offer you the real security that you seek. Be rich toward God instead. Turn toward God. And now other books in the Bible do offer us tidier answers to that question. They offer us more hope and joy, perhaps. After all, to the question of why bother if everything is pointless, Ecclesiastes instead sits down with us and says, "I don't know. But I'll keep doing what God calls me to do because I don't know a better way." And maybe in doing that, we can become truly free from all the meaningless stuff and find real joy. And this is the paradox at the core of Ecclesiastes, that to trust in God and God's power frees us to actually live our life as it is, not as we want it to be, not as we hope it to be, not as we try to control it to be, which then opens us up to find true joy, true peace, true love, all of which exist beyond our control. And so I wonder, what would it look like to invite the absurdity, even the sadness of the world into our faith lives? To let it unravel and reconstruct the places where our faith has remained shallow and easy. To keep praying for the wisdom to understand that which is beyond our ken, and for the strength to continue trusting in God's redeeming grace while also seeing the world in all its complexity and all its pain. To invite sadness and absurdity to sit with us for a bit and tell us their stories of the world and of us. Perhaps, like in the movie, their words can be the beginning of that healing that we hope for. The healing of our wild and heartbreaking world. I leave you today with words from the poet Mary Oliver. "Though I play at the edges of knowing, truly I know, our part is not knowing, but looking and touching and loving, which is the way I walked on softly through the pale pink morning light." Amen.